This is the Chariot Solutions TechCast episode number 101. Ken Rimple and Will Vong recap NGConf 2016. The TechCast is sponsored by Chariot Solutions, a full-stack application development consultancy committed to building high-quality software solutions. With expertise in Java 8, Scala, Clojure, Spring, iOS, Android, AngularJS, and other open-source technologies, we can bring the right blend of expertise and technology to bear for your organization. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com. Chariot Solutions offers consulting, mentoring, and training in open-source languages, platforms, and frameworks, such as JavaScript language fundamentals, testing, and build tools, Angular 1 and Angular 2, Scala, and Akka. We're offering a special for our podcast listeners on the first Angular 2 course we have to offer. Join us for the first beta of our Angular 2 training class on May 24th to 26th and save $100 on your ticket with the discount code of TechCast, all one word, lowercase. Today's podcast is the second of a two-part series about NGConf 2016. It features a conversation between Ken Rimple and Will Vong on events at the All Angular All the Time conference in Salt Lake City, Utah. They recorded their conversation of reflections on the show shortly after the last session, which included talks on adoption of Angular 2, the reactive APIs around state management such as NGRX Store, and more.
This is Ken Rimple, and I have Will Vong, also a Chariot Solutions developer. How are you doing?
Hey, doing well.
And so we spent the last 3 days now at NGConf. You know, it's been an action-packed week, I guess, from a technology perspective. They released candidate one of Angular, zero and then one. Yes, and like three betas before that.
Yes.
And broke the builds for everybody who was doing the development because they changed all their package structures around.
Oh, yes, yes.
Big modularity. And they had so the first day was all full of, you know, keynotes and positioning. Mm-hmm. Second day seemed to be, it was an open fair day, so they had all sorts of interesting things going on. The third day here was talks from people in the community, it seemed like more, with some peppering of people like the RxJS people and TypeScript. So, Will, your thoughts about Angular 2, since you're an Angular 1 developer,
right,
and probably this is the first time you really dug in any depth, really, because you've been busy. What do you think so far about Angular 1 or 2?
It seems like they're trying to get off on the right foot with Angular 2, because I felt with like Angular 1 when they started, it was like just throw anything into the scope and just like have everything put into directives.js or controller.js. And,
right.
You know, but it seems like they're trying to get off with the right foot now with like a style guide, codalizer for analyzing and linting your Angular code. And also I think the neat thing that was coming out of this was the Angular command line tool, which was kind of like a wrapper around their best practices, I guess.
Right, yeah, so kind of their build setup and things like
that. Right, right, which is kind of like taking away, you know, at least abstracting away some of the gulp or grunt or like, you know, that
or
whole
Webpack for that matter.
Webpack, all that stuff that, you know, if you're coming from an Angular 1, you know, background and you're just completely ignorant of everything that's been happening ever since, then, you know, this is like a big boon for you. So you don't have to like deal with some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think when we were like going around meeting people, it seemed to be somewhat divided. There were a lot of people who were still in Angular 1, but we found pockets of people that were doing Angular 2 already,
right?
Even in some projects. And they had mentioned at the end of the conference, you know, they were talking about, you know, some pretty major companies over the last couple of days. But there was a question to Brad Green about, like, you know, what would you do to convince your manager? And he said, you know, even he had heard now from, like, companies like Capital One, the Weather Channel, Lucid Charts. Google themselves. AdWords is now on Angular 2, which is like their big money maker.
Right.
So there are definitely companies moving to Angular 2 and big ones putting their stakes in the ground, which is interesting. And then, you know, you've seen TypeScript a little bit too, probably not too deeply, but what do you think in terms of people in the enterprise? Do you think it's going to be a tough sell to get them to convert to doing Angular 2 and TypeScript all in one push?
I think that from the enterprise perspective, you know, your enterprise perspective, meaning you're doing Java, you're doing, you know, .NET, the syntax of TypeScript isn't alien at all.
Right.
You know, it does combine, like, you know, a lot of the best features of a statically compile language with, you know, JavaScript. So it's not a big bridge to cross at all.
Yeah, and like. Tools would be better too.
Right.
That's a huge deal, actually.
Right, yeah. And like, you know, tooling, autocomplete, you know, that is, you know, like we were talking about before, that, you know, static compilation eliminates an entire class of problems.
Yeah.
When you're developing. So it's, I think overall, people are going to be reluctant at first, but once they get used to it, they get a little taste for it, they're going to jump in pretty full-heartedly, I think.
Seems like they're pretty close. I mean, there's one big thing that they're working on now, which is finalizing a static compiler, which there definitely needs to be a whole, you know, interview and episode around that with some of the people from Google. But I think that just having that ability to take all of your code, run it through a JavaScript compiler, minimize it, and mm-hmm. pack it up, that right. they were showing huge differences in build size, speed, first right. page,
right.
that kind of thing. And that'll be a huge deal.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
the larger applications.
They're not even done, like, you know, optimizing that. And the big thing they've been trying to talk about for Angular 2 is lazy loading stuff. And, you know, once they get to there, your initial load is supposed to drop even further up than what yeah. it is now.
Because so. You're only loading so little amount of the packages.
Right.
I think the big thing that's going to be the amount of pain the developers are going to go through now is and I've heard this from someone else, so that just triggered my thoughts on it, is production builds.
Yeah,
it's great for
yeah,
us totally. Right now, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to be like fantastically happy with
yeah.
being able to find our errors. In fact, I was converting my training stuff over, right? So I added up to beta 15. And then I saw last week all the betas broke,
yeah.
everything going forward. I'm like, oh no, the syntax changed a little for, like, right. you know, there's let instead of pound for NG4. So I waited until I got here. And then all of a sudden, Angular CLI came out with their 0.1.0 release, which was basically their first beta. And all that stuff just started to work. And I was able to ship my training stuff to our other developers, which was great.
Yeah.
But I think that building for production, there is a dist utility, you could say, like ng build.
Yes.
And it will put together like a target build.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's the area everyone's going to be focused on. How do we cut up our modules? How do we take advantage of this tree shaking concept?
Right.
You know, yeah. that's a big deal.
Yeah, and you know there seems to be the loaders between System.js and
Webpack.
Common.js
and
Webpack, and that's going to be something that I wish they would kind of just go ahead and bless one and say
right.
this is the one that we would prefer you to
use.
Almost
they want to be too open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let the community shake out what they use.
Right, but from an enterprise perspective, it's like, come on, just
they want to know
one.
A way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know the ops people are going to be like, DevOps are going to be like, well, so what should we use? And the answer is going to be we're going to have to try a few things for the first deployments.
Right.
You know, does it work? And the good thing is, at least from the development perspective, you can switch between these things.
Yes.
I actually went back and forth between a yep. gulp build I did for the South by app, a gulp build, Webpack, and then mm-hmm. finally ended up with System.js on that earliest version
right.
of Angular CLI.
Right.
And it got me somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So that was interesting. What did you think? Like, what were some of your favorite things that you saw at the conference?
I think, let's see, I thought the new component CSS style and style sheet scoping stuff, that
yeah.
was like really awesome how you attach your CSS or your styles to your component and Angular would automatically rewrite them and emulate a shadow DOM if your browser doesn't support, you know, the shadow DOM.
And so, that's the default option too.
Yeah.
Which
totally.
Is really cool.
Yeah. So I think this solves like, you know, a class of problems when you're doing component styling, you don't want that stuff to bleed out into
yeah.
other stuff, you know, on your page.
Like selected or highlighted or,
correct.
You know,
yeah.
current.
Right.
There's no more issue. They basically namespace it for you.
Right.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the Shadow DOM stuff, I really want to play with that. So
yep.
you have to turn that on specifically, it seems
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder why they do that. Maybe there's just, maybe the support for Shadow DOM is buggy based on the browser. Who knows?
Yeah, I think possibly, you know, I guess if they turn it on by default, you might offend some mobile browser that
yeah, right.
may not support it yet.
How dare you, sir? I like the, some of that offline compiling and then the first page rendering on the server. I'm eager to play around with that.
Yeah, the universal?
Angular universal. I know it seems like it's still early for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing to look at there, if you're researching this, for the podcast listener, take a look at some of the presentations from ngConf. Their goal is to do something similar to what mobile app developers do, but a little more live. So in mobile apps like Android and iOS, you'll probably notice that you open up and you get a splash screen, sometimes even a smarter splash screen that looks like it's almost active.
Right.
And then after everything starts booting up, you start moving along.
Right.
But they're getting really smart about this. So they actually let the server dynamically render it, send it back to the client, so your first view is live data that you can do things with.
Right.
And then they have like a queue that they're building up with events, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I think as it starts capturing events and then sending them to the server and playing them back on the server.
So as it's loading.
As it's loading. So your first initial view is actually like
live.
You know, semi-live with like stuff with the events.
I really want to see that in action. And I can see for a large app that has a lot of modules like that. And we should mention the lazy loading is going to depend on, they've been working on refactoring the component router.
Right.
So I guess it went through a year of kind of ups and downs. And now Mishko Havery has been really working on that. That's like his baby right now.
Right.
And he has been working on the proxying, or I shouldn't say proxying, the lazy loading of components. And one of the things they said in that talk was, if they break up the components into file-based, you know, chunks and modules, then you can load the modules whenever you touch the particular tree that you're looking at.
Right.
Which could really help a larger application.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I'm still curious what happens when you route away from it. Do they clean it up? And you know, how do you get... So you could have an app that you rarely visit 70% of it, right? But you could have an app that eventually you get to 100% of in a busy application. And
right.
Then you have a memory loading profile that's heavy. So be curious to see how they clean up after themselves as well.
Or not.
Or not. And maybe it's not so bad. Maybe. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool. What did you think of the Material Design 2 stuff?
I was very impressed by it.
That code demo was insane.
Yeah,
right?
I don't remember the name of the presenter, but she was typing like a million miles per hour.
I've never seen anything faster than that.
Yeah. I was very impressed
with
it.
Use pause.
Yeah. I was very impressed by it. And it made me wonder, like, why am I using Bootstrap all the time? I should give this a shot, because I was very impressed by how quickly they were able to put together the layout and make it seem coherent and consistent. And, you know, everything seemed to make a lot of, you know, sense from, you know, the components that they were putting together and composing.
It was just fantastic. And it's starting to look really good. Now, they say that's still kind of a very early alpha. So I think a lot of the components you would look for aren't there yet.
Right.
But it did seem like, so there's an Angular Bootstrap 2.
Yes.
That you found, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like that's already been updated.
Yeah, that looks pretty complete. Yeah. I believe from the GitHub page, it said they had 80% of the Bootstrap functionality in there.
That's fantastic.
I'll have to give that a try, maybe on the flight home or something like that.
And they were talking about, the one thing that I thought was interesting was that they were talking about making it a platform rather than a framework, right? That was the big talk on the first day. And then you walk around the vendor room, right?
Right.
And what was half of them? They were widget companies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Wijmo, and I don't know if they were there, but Telerik.
Right.
That's their big one.
Right. Vaadin.
Vaadin was there. I'm like, Vaadin?
Yeah.
I remember them from GWT days, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's, you can tell that big companies are betting on Angular. Be curious to go back and see, are people building like other components for React, or are they doing components for Polymer?
Right.
It seems like that Angular is really a platform a lot of companies are betting on.
Yeah. And when we're talking about like a platform, the other big thing that they were pushing was like NativeScript.
Yeah.
Was being able to just code an Angular app and then change your platform import. That's just simplifying it a little bit too much.
Yeah, maybe a little, but I'm not sure. I don't think you're far off. At least the services and all the other things,
right.
The pipes and you know, your business objects and things like that, and your data objects.
Your animations.
Your animations, because they said that was going to be part of it too, right?
Yeah, and the animations were going to render natively on whatever platform.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you're on a mobile app with a GPU rendering your animations.
Right.
So that could be really cool. And then there was a big push today to make sure that functional reactive programming was at the forefront. And it does seem like, you know, we've at Chariot, we've been working with, you know, Scala has been the big platform that everyone's pushed, to Scala and Akka doing very strong functional based programming. And sometimes that can be taken to an extreme, in my opinion, and I'm sure more than me thinks that.
Sure, yes.
But it seems like, at least in the JavaScript community, we're so used to mapping over things and filtering and all that,
right,
that it's kind of native to us that we're doing that. And now all of a sudden you get that in Angular using an asynchronous thing as well.
Right.
You know, so I think that Angular and RxJS is going to be a killer combination. Yeah. But that whole thing about NGRX, that yeah. group with Rob Wormhold.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on that one? Not to put you on the spot, but
I thought the point in the demo, and you'll have to watch the video when they post it, they were talking about the ability to time travel the application
time
state.
Time travel debugger was crazy.
Yeah, that was like, okay, I can see this being like a, you know, really cool.
Yeah. Except the only part about that is you can time travel your state, but what about the rest of the app? Right. I don't know what happens then. But yeah, basically you could go back and say, I want to look at this state. I want to debug it, look into it, and then make commit that this is the current state and throw away the future.
Right. Yeah. I thought it was really cool stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see where it is in a few months, I think.
It's funny. I still think that all these dispatcher frameworks, I just go back to like the request dispatcher and struts. I don't know why. And I think that big XML struts config file. Big,
yeah. And, you know.
I mean, that's dating me right there.
I have a huge struts background, so like
you know
I
what told, I'm talking about.
Yeah, the struts config,
like,
and then like you know the people were like you know trying to break up the struts config into multiple files,
yes.
and then other people were saying no, you want it's like a sitemap
right.
of your application.
Oh, I've been through all that, and so I think that the danger anti pattern there would be that you put so much in the reducers
right.
that you've got this giant reducer monolith to deal with, and then same thing, break it up. Okay, just use more than one reducer. Now you're looking at 50 reducers going, where's my logic?
Right.
So I think that could be the downside, though I don't want to harsh on it because it's an interesting concept. And maybe the client side of an app is a little less sophisticated than the server side, and so maybe there's more logic. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, it's hard to tell where that's going to go.
Right.
But it's definitely one to watch. And I do like the fact that the store is kind of pluggable to different things like local storage and databases and things like that. So
that was very
definitely
cool.
Check out NGRX as a place to look at if you're researching some of this stuff. All right. So, you know, it was a good 3 days in Salt Lake. I heard through the grapevine that it might be in Denver next year, which I'm kind of impressed by because I like Salt Lake, but it'd also be cool because it's Denver.
Lots of local brews up there too.
Yeah, that's true. So if it's in Denver, that'd be awesome. But who knows if that's true or not. Maybe just the rumor mill. But we will probably check in, or I'll check in again then. So thanks so much, Will Vaughn, for being part of this.
Oh, not a problem.
All right.
Pleasure.
Check out our website for more content over the coming months. We'll announce it via our Twitter handle, @ChariotSolution. But if you want to browse, you can hit chariotsolutions.com/techcast for all of our podcasts. Thanks again for listening to the TechCast, hosted by Ken Rimple, who is @KRimple on Twitter, and Becca Refford, who is @BexRefford. Thanks for listening.